From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the first full week of this year when newly elected Monroe County Executive Cheryl Donolfo submitted legislation to establish a new Office of Public Integrity, a kind of watchdog that would be asked to investigate potential scandals or shady dealings in county government. It was the fulfillment of a campaign promise by Donolfo. 5 years ago, county Democrats proposed essentially the same thing. But at the time, Republicans criticized the proposal as just another unnecessary layer of government, and they voted it down. This time, the proposal comes from a Republican leader, and it will get another vote next Tuesday, 1 week from today. But Democrats are saying it is not good enough for one significant reason. Under County Executive Donolfo's proposal, the county executive would be allowed to appoint and fire the director of the ethics office. And why, Democrats ask, would an ethics director feel truly independent if the county executive could walk in and fire him or her at will? It's an interesting time for the proposal. Bob Wiesner, the former security director for the Monroe County Water Authority, and the husband of former county executive Maggie Brooks, pleaded guilty to a bid rigging charge. Part of a plea deal. Wiesner pleading guilty to the felony along with a violation of the state's Donnelly Act. In return, no prison time and some relatively small fines totaling $8,000. Is that fair? That's the deal that prosecutors constructed. Well, this hour, we're going to try to explain how that deal works, what comes next in that case for some of the other people involved, and what an ethics office would and should look like. Let me welcome my guests for the hour, one of the people in our city reporting on these stories most consistently, and here to help us understand them is David Riley, reporter for the Democrat and Chronicle. And David, nice to have you back.
Same here.
And Jim Shepard is a Democrat in the Monroe County Legislature. He's here, and he's also the former director of the Office of Public Integrity for the city of Rochester. Jim, nice to have you here.
Thank you very much.
I want to start with just mentioning as well that we invited the county executive, Ms. Donolfo, to join us. And she, her staff tells us she's not available to talk this hour about it. We offered a chance to jump on the phone for at least a few minutes this morning. And again, that offer to record a conversation we could play in full. And we were told she's just not available for that. They did redirect us to a statement that she released on January 26th on the matter. So let me go ahead and read that now. This comes from County Executive Cheryl Donolfo. Quote, "Today's court proceeding involved a sad past chapter of county government. Monroe County is in a new day. Eliminating the LDCs that were the subject of this proceeding will continue to move forward. I am pleased that the boards of the LDCs have agreed to work with the county to eliminate these entities and return their functions to county government to ensure full public accountability. I am equally gratified that the approval process for the Office of Public Integrity is moving forward in the legislature." End quote. So clearly, Jim Shepard, she feels that this is the right kind of construction for an ethics office. Even though she could hire and fire somebody, she feels like this is the right way to do it. Now, when you were the director of the Office of Public Integrity for the city of Rochester, that was when?
That was from March 2010 till November 2010.
Okay. And that was under Mayor Bob Duffy, right?
That is correct.
All right. Were you independent enough? Could he have walked in and fired you?
Yes. I was appointed by him, and that was the structure of the office at the time, the way that it was built in 2006.
Okay. Did you get the sense that, even though you were working for Bob Duffy, the mayor at the time, could you, if anything had come up, and I'm not accusing anybody, I'm just asking hypothetically, could you have felt independent and free enough to investigate the mayor, city council, et cetera?
Obviously, having had a relationship with Bob Duffy for 20-plus years, I felt very comfortable being able to say what was, as it was brought to my attention, it wasn't a concern. And I think that any public official wants to feel that way, but if the opportunity presents itself and integrity's not in play, other things could occur.
Okay, but here you are now as a Democrat in the Monroe County Legislature, newly elected, and you're looking at this proposal, and your concern exactly is what, Jim?
I think that there's an association of inspector generals which outlines, you know, what a integrity office should look like and the accountability and the independence that it should have. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is the fact that going back 4 or 5 years, if we already had an integrity office in the county, would that person feel comfortable going to the county exec to say, we believe that your husband is involved in activities that may not be ethical? And so that's the thinking, is that if you go with the standards, nobody can challenge you down the road based on how you built your office.
All right. So you want more independence, even more, fair to say, even more than you had when you were running the same kind of office for the city.
I think that's key, because if you want true independence, if you want true integrity, you want true accountability, you want somebody in that office who's bringing integrity, and they're going to do things with integrity, and they feel free to investigate anything that is inappropriate.
Okay. And David Riley, it's fair to point out that the split in the county legislature indicates that Mr. Shepard's proposal, not likely, at least if past history is a guide, to gain much traction. 1910 is the split in the legislature. So the proposal goes to a vote next Tuesday, is that right? From County Executive DeNolfo, her proposal, yes?
Right. The full county legislature is supposed to take it up next week. A smaller committee that sort of decides what the legislature is going to deal with looked at it a week or so back, and it was split along party lines. Democrats voted against the proposal because of some of the concerns Mr. Shepard raised.
Okay. Jim, you know, I know you are still new to county government, and I also know that you've come in and said, you know, you are reaching out, trying to establish good relationships with your colleagues in both parties in the legislature. Are you feeling like your concerns and your own proposal on this are going to get heard?
We will definitely be heard. I mean, because we're going to express what we believe should be, how the office should be constructed going forward. And I think a key piece is that, for me, it's not a matter of being Democrat versus Republican. Really, what it has to be is about establishing an office that is consistent with, you know, what the county exec has said she wants, which is an office that is the most transparent and ethical in the nation. And if you don't follow national standards, then you're not putting your place, putting yourself in that position. And so that's a key piece is, you know, it's already been stated as the goal. Let's meet that goal.
Well, if you think, you know, hey, even if the county executive is going to appoint somebody, you know, they'll probably do the job, that they will feel independent. You know, you don't have to look back that far in history to find an example when public confidence was shaken, I would say, by the perception that government is creating its own watchdog. It was in July of 2013 that Governor Andrew Cuomo created a Moreland Commission on Public Corruption. He declared that this all-star legal team would have subpoena power. It would follow whatever trail of corruption it found, no matter where that trail led. Let's listen to what Governor Cuomo said on that July 2013 day.
You've never had a group with this talent and with this power. And I believe it's going to go a long way towards making the people of this state feel rightfully that they have a government that they can trust. If this government has something to hide, this group of people is going to find it, and they're going to expose it. And that's what this is all about.
Within a year, the governor quietly shut down the Moreland Commission, even though, as we later discovered through the work of U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, the commission was essentially still in the process of examining possible corruption in a number of places. So why would the governor boast of the commission's independence and then interfere? Here's what he told Cranes in 2014. Quote, "The Moreland Commission was my commission, my commission, my subpoena power, my Moreland Commission. I can appoint it. I can disband it. I appoint you. I can unappoint you tomorrow. So interference, it's my commission. I can't interfere with it because it is mine. It is controlled by me," end quote. Now, later, the governor would say that the commission was, in fact, independent, and he never intended to block their work. But Jim Shepard, is that an example of a leader of government appointing a commission that is supposed to investigate possible corruption and then essentially, you know, appearing to either block or undermine it? Is that a concern?
That is definitely a concern, because what you want is a public office that is free to investigate any corruption, fraud. And it's not just about corruption and fraud. It could be where you're doing reviews and making things better. So it's not always going to be about corruption. It could be about looking at systems and making them better, making sure the reporting is correct. But if you're going to have the opportunity to disband it at will, that person's not going to do things that may upset their boss.
Now, you've had the chance as a police chief and in your various places of work to have people work under you. How valuable is it, Jim, to have someone who's not just what we would call a yes man or a yes woman, someone who will challenge you?
The key piece is to have people that have the confidence to tell you when they think you're wrong and to tell you a different side of every issue. Because if all you have is people that are telling you what you have already said or what you want to hear, that's, you don't need another mind in the room, because your mind has already decided where you're going or just thinking the thoughts that you're thinking. The reason you have people around you is because they bring different experiences, different thought processes, different levels of intelligence, and you take advantage of all of that to make decisions and to build your organization.
And again, your concern was, for example, if you go back 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, that whoever was, had this office been created when it was first proposed by Democrats 5 years ago, that whoever was at the head of the office, had they been appointed by Ms. Brooks, your concern was maybe they wouldn't have the courage or the relationship to tell the county executive, it appears that your husband is rigging a bid here, whether you know it or not.
And again, that's why you'd want to have that independence. And I think that, again, national standards exist, and that is one of the key caveats is independence, because experience has taught us that without independence, you don't get true integrity.
All right. So, listeners, if you want to call the program and weigh in on what we're hearing about the creation of an ethics office, how it should work, or if you've got questions about, you know, the plea deal and what happens going forward in the LDC's case, the Bob Wiesner plea, et cetera, we're going to try to answer those for you. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. David Riley from the Democrat and Chronicle. There have been a lot of questions from the public about how the plea deal worked with Bob Wiesner. And again, he pleaded guilty to one charge of bid rigging, a felony, along with a violation of the Donnelly Act. What is it? A lot of people have been saying, the what? What is this? I know you've heard that question too.
Sure. Well, the single bid rigging charge is a violation of the Donnelly Act. The Donnelly Act is a state law that's sort of modeled after a federal law that's supposed to ensure that when government is dealing with public projects, that that bidders aren't colluding to sort of to defraud the process. It's supposed to ensure a fair and open field when a contract goes out for bid, to ensure that everybody has a fair shot at it. So essentially, he's been accused of violating that by rigging the bid for this major public contract.
Okay. And that was the plea. Mm-hmm. That was the admission in court. One charge of that. No prison time. David's job is to report. One of his colleagues, David Andriotta's job is occasionally to report and occasionally to weigh in. And David, along with many others, have said that he didn't appreciate the kind of deal. Jim Shepard, did you look at this deal? Do you feel like you've got, you know, were you satisfied with the Wiesner plea deal as a legislator and as a taxpayer?
In conversations that I've had with, you know, family and friends, the one thing that jumped out for me is that if I was involved in something where I hit you upside the head and took your wallet, I'm going to jail. And even if I only took $2. And when you have something that involves millions of dollars, you would think that the consequences would be a little bit greater.
Okay. Now, we have some questions that have already come in this morning in regards to what happens next year. Based on this plea, based on some of the other names in the case, because as we know, Bob Wiesner wasn't the only one involved or at the center of the LDC's case. And in a second, we'll get there with David Riley of the Democrat and Chronicle. But just for a moment, I want to step aside and bring in Scott Feibusch, my colleague at WXXI, because we are in the middle of what we hope is a one-day-only drive. But we'll be here as long as it takes to reach our fundraising goal, and we will stop when we get there, Scott. That's always nice.
It is. It is. So it really is not up to us to decide when this drive ends. It's up to you with a phone call right now to 800-295-9994 or locally in Rochester to 454-6300. You can pledge online at WXXI.org or WEOS.org. And you really make the difference right now as to whether or not programming like what you're listening to here is going to get supported quickly and efficiently so we can get back to bringing you what we do every day, what Evan does every day, which is 2 solid hours of talking about local issues.
Scott, we've talked about it on this program before, and occasionally I've been accused of threatening the listeners. There's no threats going on. This is all positive. We're keeping it very sunny and cheery, and in fact, we're thrilled that we're making the progress we are in this fund drive because we want it to be over. Listeners want it to be over. We want to go back to a full slate of broadcasting with no interruptions. But we also know, Scott, and you know probably better than anybody, that if you travel around the country, there are a whole lot of local NPR member stations that don't have local talk shows anymore, right?
Probably the majority of them.
We are
in the minority here in Rochester and the Finger Lakes in having this asset every day and in having 2 solid hours to bring in the breadth of topics that you bring in every day here on Connections. It happens because of member support. It happens because people just like you say, you know what, this is worth a few dollars to me to be able to have this on the air without being constantly interrupted by commercials, without people trying to sell me something, to just be able to sit down and talk at length. Imagine if you had to interrupt yourself every 8 or 10 minutes like commercial radio does. How much of a conversation could you get started?
Actually, I just was thinking about that. Once in a while, I'm an apostate, and I go over to the commercial side of radio when I'm in the car just to see. There was a 6.5-minute commercial break that I heard in the morning today. And I actually just listened through just almost out of curiosity. How long is this going to go? There's no way we're ever going to do that. And that's because our audience, our listeners know that we need them. It's 454-6300 right now. 454-6300. Or the 1-800 number if you're a little bit farther outside the Rochester region, because we know our broadcast signal goes a long way here. And Scott, what's the 1-800 number?
800-295-9994. 800-295-9994. You can also pledge through the WXXI mobile app. If perhaps you're driving around, I know I have friends now who are away from the radio airwaves and just listen through the app on their phones. It's a great way to stay caught up, great way to access connections and so much else of what we do here through podcasting. All of that costs money. Hiring the producer, you've got Megan Mackin here now working with you as a producer. It's a huge asset to the show. That costs money that we come to you to help support. 454-6300. Help us not be here tomorrow. Help us not have to be here asking you for money tomorrow, because I know you've probably got 2 hours of great programming already set for tomorrow that you don't want to have interrupted.
No question. So thank you, Scott. We'll check in with Scott a little later in the hour to see how things are going. 454-6300 if you want to make a pledge, and I know you do right now because I know this type of programming matters to you, and this is our chance to end it early. This is the Groundhog Day, one day only. At least that's the goal. But if we're coming back tomorrow morning, it just means we're not there yet, and we want to get there and wrap it up. So 454-6300. Now, back to the conversation, and we're in sort of phone number soup here, but not to confuse the issue. If you want to call and talk about the question on the ethics office or questions about plea deals and what's going on in county politics, et cetera, it's a different number. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And we're starting to see some comments and questions come in here. So let me start, before I get to some of that, let me just ask David Riley from the Democrat and Chronicle, what are the next steps here? Bob Wiesner's plea is done. He's got about $8,000 in fines, no prison time, pleaded guilty to a felony. But what's next in the LDC's case?
So before Mr. Wiesner, another defendant in the case, John Maggio, a local accountant, also entered a plea deal. So that leaves only two people left in the case who have not taken plea deals yet. One of them, Nelson Rivera, he's the county's former IT director, is supposed to appear in court on Wednesday, and his attorney said that that is also to discuss a plea agreement. So it sounds like we may soon be down to one defendant, which is Dan Lynch. He's a local businessman. And we'll have to see what happens with his case. He faces more charges than anybody else involved. But barring another plea deal, the case is scheduled to go to trial on February 23rd. So between now and then, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Okay. And, you know, here's Mark writing in saying, how come the county executive herself, and he's talking about Maggie Brooks, wasn't charged? Her husband wouldn't be rigging a bid without her blessing. I would just say to Mark, I don't have any evidence of that. And David Riley, how would you answer Mark's question on that?
Yeah, and to be clear, prosecutors haven't alleged Ms. Brooks was involved at all, and she has always maintained that she wasn't. Mr. Wiesner's plea agreement very clearly is limited to what he did as the security director at the Monroe County Water Authority. He talks about having given information that he had about the authority's security needs to the bidder who ultimately ended up winning the contract. So it's very narrowly worded to focus solely on his actions, and Brooks just hasn't been formally involved in any of the prosecution.
Okay. In a Q&A you did for the Democrat and Chronicle online recently, you took a lot of questions. You know, for example, what has the Water Authority itself said about this? The Water Authority has been a place that some have accused has been sort of a house of patronage. A lot of names go there. The jobs are well-paying. And in this case, have they said much about their former security director's plea here, David?
No. Essentially, they said because the case is not fully resolved, they're not going to talk about it for the time being.
Okay. And perhaps not a surprise there. I see I'm trying to get to the phones here. Only our spark is a little wonky here. So, Megan Mack, you're going to have to tell me who's on the lines here. I can only see one side of it here. I actually can't hear you through. This is why we need our listeners to make pledges, because I can't hear her through the paging system either there. So, but if your listeners, you got a chance to call and get your questions answered, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. First up is Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. I mean, this question about having independence in regard to ethics is like, you know, self-identifying, kind of an easy answer. Well, of course. Unfortunately, the county legislature has for years had kind of this veil around them that they don't seem to have to feel they have to be really accountable in a real open way. And I often wonder why some of the people who are obviously probably going to vote against this, or in the various suburbs, that don't really have to sell them or have to face the public for anything, really. I mean, and who are the people voting for all these people? Don't they care about what happens? It seems to me such an obvious issue. And on the other hand, too, if I were a leader in, a county executive or whatever in those kind of positions, I would want to know if there was something not quite going right, unless I really don't care. But I would want to know because I'd rather be able to deal with it, even if it had to go to another step, rather than having, be embarrassed or look like an idiot or whatever. I think it's hard to find an excuse except for the fact that, they get away with a lot and everything's kind of not very transparent, and they want to keep it that way.
Bonnie, thanks for the phone call. I know a number of people, based on the emails that are already coming in, essentially feel that way. Abe writing to us saying, it just feels like what we're getting from county government is lip service, that this is not actually about accountability and transparency in an ethics office because of the way it's constructed. Alex writes to us with a question for Mr. Shepard. Mr. Shepard have to investigate any city matters during his time as director of the city's Office of Public Integrity?
Yes, there were a number of investigations that came through the office that related to contracts and procurement. Some of those did result in arrests. Some of them resulted in pleas and convictions. And based on some of the earlier comments that you read off, a key piece that I want to stress is that this is a tremendous opportunity for the county exec to put something in place that forever will define her position on integrity. If we take a half step, everybody's going to know that it's a half step. And I think that if we comply with the standards, it's not being Democrat or Republican, it's really just about being impartial, transparent, with integrity.
Do you think, though, it doesn't sound like, Jim, it doesn't sound like her position is going to change here. Again, we invited the county executive on this program. We were told she wasn't available. They sent the statement over that she released on January 26th, which indicates she wants this to pass 1 week from tonight in the Monroe County Legislature. And just based on the numbers of Republicans in the legislature, it probably will, based on past history, Jim. So do you get the sense that, I don't know if you've talked to her directly about it, but do you think that she honestly thinks this is enough, or do you think that are you sort of feeling somewhat cynical about this creation?
I'm not to the cynical place yet. I've been there for 14 minutes. but in terms of what they want to pass, it's basically establishing the office, and the meat, the leaves on the tree, just haven't really been put on the table. And so I'm advocating for, when they put those leaves on the tree, it is an office of integrity, an office of inspector general that is fully public, has integrity, confidentiality, whistleblower protection, all those things that we know will make it meaningful and worth having.
We're talking to Jim Shepard, who's a Democrat in the Monroe County Legislature. He's talking about his concerns with the proposal for a new ethics office, an office of public integrity proposed by the new county executive, Cheryl Dinolfo. She wants that office established. It would be headed by a director who she could appoint and fire, and there will be a vote in a week on this issue. Former Chief Shepard says that there should be more independence, that the county executive shouldn't just have hiring and firing power on this, because that could taint the independence of the person leading this kind of an office. And David Riley is also here, a reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle, who has been covering this issue. He's been covering the LDC trials and the recent plea deal of Bob Wiesner related to that. And so let me get back to the phones. And our next caller is the person who ran against Cheryl Dinolfo. This is Sandy Frankel calling in. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, glad to do it. I have three comments and questions related to the topics. One, I just want to say that I support Jim's position on independence for an Office of Public Integrity. That's critical to ensure that the people who serve can really do the work they will be appointed to do. Secondly, I wanted to ask David if he thinks that it would be more appropriate for us to be calling for a jury trial for the remaining two defendants rather than having the judge accept a plea bargain for one or both of them, which apparently may well be in the works. And the point of that being that we could then, as the public, have greater insight into the facts that came out during the investigation, that there'd be greater transparency in this whole process. So that's another point that I wanted to make. So if you can help with those two issues, that would be great.
Well, hold on, Sandy. Stay there, and let's let David, you want to start working through that? Go ahead.
Sure. I guess I would be wary of saying, yes, the public should demand a jury trial here, just because my role is as a reporter, and I try not to to opine on things like that. That said, I certainly understand the frustration that I think the public has without necessarily seeing a trial, in this case, for at least several of the defendants. And I hear frequently from readers who feel like they want a real full airing of the facts in this case, and with plea bargains, they're not getting it.
Yes, and you know, the third point I wanted to raise had to do with the plea bargain that Bob Wiesner secured, and the injustice, as I see it, between his penalty, if you will, and people who are convicted of lesser crimes who have to go to jail, who have harsher penalties. And there's a real injustice, a real imbalance there.
Jim, you kind of made a similar point earlier. Do you feel that way?
I think my statement was pretty much right on point in terms of you can look at anything that has happened over any period of time and where people have committed crimes, lesser crimes, more violent crimes, that we all know what the end results are going to be if they're convicted. And I think in this case, based on the amount of money that was involved and the public trust, you would expect that there would be greater consequences.
Okay. Sandy, anything else you want to weigh in with before we let you go?
No, that's it. But thank you all so much for what you're doing.
That's Sandy Frankel, ran for county executive against Cheryl DeNolfo in the last election. And again, if you're just joining us, the county executive was not available to join us, but I think I'd just do common fairness and read the statement again that she sent along, because the county executive has been calling for an Office of Public Integrity, and as soon as I can dig it out of my stack of papers, this is just one of those days where if I print everything David Riley and David Andriotta have written, you know, we can fill the studio here. You've had a lot to do in recent weeks. Here it is. This is from County Executive Cheryl DeNolfo, who could not join us on this program, but here's her statement once again in response to the Bob Wiesner plea, the LDC trials, and the creation of an Office of Public Integrity. Quote, today's court proceeding involved a sad past chapter of county government. Monroe County is in a new day. Eliminating the LDCs that were the subject of this proceeding will continue to move forward. I am pleased that the boards of the LDCs have agreed to work with the county to eliminate these entities and return their functions to county government to ensure full public accountability. I am equally gratified that the approval process for the Office of Public Integrity is moving forward in the legislature. That comes, end quote, that comes from Cheryl DeNolfo. On Twitter, Dave writes to us, different Dave, he says, can Bob Wiesner face federal charges for honest services? And if so, could Maggie Brooks be in for a RICO charge? David Riley.
Certainly, federal investigators have been looking at this case for some time now, and they haven't filed any charges. Whether that's changed, I don't really know, but it seems that at least up to this point, they haven't seen much of a reason to pursue it. Could he face federal charges? I suppose it's possible.
Okay. And some of your colleagues have raised the issue of whether we could see a civil case in this. And, you know, again, I don't know how much of your work has crossed over or how much you feel you can kind of weigh in on how that would work. Because sometimes in a civil lawsuit, you know, we hear talk of class action, et cetera. Essentially impossible is my understanding in this case, that taxpayers of Monroe County couldn't sue Bob Wiesner or sue on based on this lawsuit and expect any kind of success here. But there might be a different way for this to come out in a civil way. Is that right?
Right. It doesn't sound like a class action would be something that's possible, but it does sound like someone who can show some material harm from this bid rigging process, and that might include bidders, it might include the county government itself, might have grounds to sue. Whether anyone will decide to pursue that, we don't know yet.
All right. So, Jim Shepherd, you're not the county executive. You're just a Democrat in the minority in the county legislature. And as you said, you've been there for about 14 minutes. But should the county consider a suit in this, in that fashion, that could seek to recover some of the losses, or at least extend the penalty against the perpetrators?
At this point in time, I don't think I have enough information to know where the money went. But I think that what I'm advocating for is that, you know, this is a defining moment for the county exec, a defining moment for the Monroe County Legislature, for us to put something in place that shows that, based on what has occurred, that we're going to do something that will truly make a difference.
Okay. Andrew writes to us and says, I'm not always 100% up on all things that matter, but how does this oversight board compare with the one that Governor Andrew Cuomo dissolved? And again, I mentioned that earlier in the hour, Andrew. I think there is a comparison there. It wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't an Office of Public Integrity, but it was a Moreland Commission that he appointed, in his words, to be independent and to investigate corruption, to find it, to expose it. And with the power of subpoena, he called it a legal all-star team, and then he disbanded it, later saying, it was my commission. I could put it together and I could get rid of it. It was always going to be my commission. So essentially kind of tipping the hand that there wasn't a whole lot of independence despite the initial proclamations there. So I think it's a fair question, Andrew. It's exactly what Jim Shepherd is raising when it comes to the creation of an Office of Public Integrity. Who heads it? And are they truly going to be independent? Jim is saying, if the county executive can hire and fire, too much pressure, too much expectation, not enough independence, and he wants it done a different way here. So let's get a short break, and we're going to come back with try to answer more of your questions with Jim Shepherd, who's a legislator in the legislature for the last, 14 or 15 minutes or so. This is his new career. He recently elected in November after serving as chief of Rochester Police, among other things. And how many years on the beat? How many years as an officer?
33 years in the Rochester Police Department.
All right. So it's a new career for Jim. And David Riley's here as well, reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle. Short break, and more of your questions answered next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about community design through the lens of justice and equity. It's not a question, or at least a framing, that comes up very often. We usually talk about what businesses are going to work, what kind of stores we should open, but we're talking about how to have those discussions and still talk about environmental justice, social justice, and more. That's next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and my colleague Scott Feibusch is stepping back in for a moment to ask for your support here. This is our, the goal is for a one-day drive. The goal is for a one-hour drive. We're in the six-hour mark now. But we will be asking for public contributions until we've reached our goal, 454-6300, if you support this programming. And I know you do because you're listening right now. So Scott Feibusch is here to come in and tell us about why we need the public support here.
We need the public support here because you may think that public radio is brought to you with government money. It is not. It has not been for a very long time. You may think that the underwriters that you hear on the show carry all the bills for making this show possible. They do not. We depend primarily, overwhelmingly, on support from people just like you who tune in and enjoy a show like Connections. Where else, if you are a county legislator in the county legislature, where else can you get heard for this length of time? It doesn't happen. You might get a soundbite on the news, if you're lucky, on the commercial news. You might get a few seconds on TV at night. But as far as actually being able to get your quote or two in the paper, as far as being heard at length, this is the place where that happens. This is the place where you get to have an extended conversation, get to have a voice in the conversation. And the price that you pay is simply being asked every once in a while to open up your wallet to make that call to 454-6300. You can call us toll free at 800-295-9994, 800-295-9994. Pledge online at WXXI.org or WEOS.org. However you do it, we are asking you to do what is comfortable for you to help, A, keep the show on the air, and B, make this drive as short as possible, because as soon as we get to that $150,000 mark. We're at $81,000 right now. We're beyond the halfway point. As soon as we get there, we're done.
All right. So 454-6300. I will say this is totally unfair to Jim Shepard, who didn't come in here to pitch. Jim's here to talk. But, you know, first time Jim was on this program when I was the host, he was running for office for the Monroe County Legislature. And we got to speak at length about his life, his career, his work. We had a good long conversation about why he wanted this job after a year in law, after a career in law enforcement. And we're walking out, and Jim said, "Man, you do your homework." And I said, "Well, we're going to talk for an hour. You know, the host is not going to come in unprepared." And so, to Scott's point, we value that. We pride ourselves on that. It only works if we have the time and the impetus to do that. And it works because the public supports us. So 454-6300. We love to say vote with your wallet. Every time you open your wallet, you're making a decision on your values. And it's 454-6300. We do need you. We'd like to wrap this up today. We'll be here tomorrow if we have to. We'll be here when? What day is it? Tuesday? We'll be here Thursday if we have to. I might come in Saturday morning if I have to, but I'd like to be done today. It's 454-6300. And I think, have we ended it in one day in the past?
I believe we last year, yeah. I think we pulled it off in a day. We can do it again today. You know, it's not up to us. We'll come in and keep doing it. It is up to the listeners. It is up to you to decide whether you want to wait for a day to make that call or whether you want to do it now. It does not have to be any specific amount. It's great if you're able to do, let's say, the $10 a month level. It's great if you're able to do a dollar a day or more. But if it's just a matter of 5 or 10 or 20 bucks, that helps get us where we need to be, too. Every little bit helps. This is truly a community project to keep this broadcast going for the community. As we mentioned in the last break, a lot of cities don't have a show like this, don't have an opportunity like this for local newsmakers to come in and talk at length, without commercial interruptions, without commercial considerations. We do help keep it that way. 454-6300.
All right, here's my last comment on that before we end the pitching, and that's this. You know, this is a time of year where everybody's sort of watching the national scene. You're watching debates. You're seeing a lot of cable news, maybe more than doctors would recommend for your daily diet. And there's a lot of shouting, and there's a lot of that. We try to avoid that. We try to bring in people from various parts of our community. We try to bring them together. And again, as I said today, the county executive was not available today. I totally understand that. But we're going to bring people together from different viewpoints if and whenever we can. Yesterday, we were talking about charter schools. We had a board member, a board chair of Rochester Prep, along with some panelists who are, I think, in many ways against the charter school model. I got emails from both sides this morning saying that was as thorough and fair as they felt a conversation's been had on this subject in this community in a long time. And I appreciated hearing that, and I hope our listeners did too. And if that's what you value, we need you right now. 454-6300, 454-6300. And Scott, I guess we'll check back next hour and we'll see where we are. I guess we'll check back. We probably will have to check
we'll
back.
Get an update. If we can do it next hour, more power to your listeners. Yeah. One more thing before I step out, because I don't want to take too much more time out of your conversation here, which is that when you decide to make that phone call, sends a message to us too. Because if you make that call during Connections, that gets noticed. We keep track of who calls each hour and how many calls come in each hour. And so if a lot of calls come in, if we're able to make a significant dent in that number during the next hour and 14 minutes or so of Connections, that really is a vote that you're casting with your dollar to say, hey, what Evan does here is important. Make sure you keep doing more of it.
Thank you for taking up for me.
454-6300.
I don't like to be the guy to say that, but this would be really meaningful to me if you called right now.
I just say I'm a huge Evan Dawson fan.
Thank you, Scott Feibusch.
454-6300.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Back to the discussion on LDCs, the Bob Wiesner plea, the creation of an Office of Public Integrity. David Riley from the Democrat and Chronicle is here to help answer some of the questions on the factual side. Jim Shepard, a Democrat in the Monroe County Legislature, who's also the former director of the Office of Public Integrity for the City of Rochester, so certainly has some experience in this realm, and he is essentially calling for a different model. So if you're just joining us, very briefly, a week from tonight, Monroe County Legislature set to vote on the proposal from the new county executive, Sheldon Alfo. She wants a public integrity office, but it would be created in a fashion that she could appoint and fire the director. And Jim Shepard, for those who missed it earlier, briefly, your concern with that is what?
To have true independence, the person who has that position should be able to conduct the investigations that need to be conducted, need to be able to shine light on operations that need to be illuminated, and not be in fear that if I touch the wrong operation or the wrong individuals, that could cost me my job.
All right, so some other points here. David Riley, some of the feedback that we've gotten, and I'm sure you've gotten as well, is at least some level of frustration with the plea that Bob Wiesner got. As Jim Shepard has said, there are people who've committed far lesser violations and gotten prison time. Bob Wiesner, no prison time, about an $8,000 fine. And some have said, well, that wasn't fair, and had he gone to trial, it would have been differently. It would have been different. This was a plea that helped him. Had he gone to trial and had he lost, it not necessarily would have been different based on history. What do we know about that?
It might have been a little different, but it wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have expected to see him doing major prison time, certainly. The maximum penalty that he faced if convicted at trial was between a year and a third and 4 years in prison. As a former police officer, Mr. Wiesner was retired from the Rochester Police Department as a guy with no criminal record. It seems fairly unlikely, and Chief Shepard can probably speak to this better than me, that he would have seen prison time. He also could have faced a fine, and that's probably where the biggest difference would have been. It would have been $100,000 or twice whatever his gains from this scheme were, which, as spelled out in the plea agreement, seems to amount to a $3,000 discount on a home security system, which isn't much. So the outcome might have been a bit different on the financial side, but I don't think we would have seen him in prison.
Okay. Jim, fair enough, based on your own experience. I know you weren't a prosecutor. You're a police officer and a chief, but very possible that in this case, a man with his record, his background, might not have gone to prison even through trial.
As a policeman, everybody should go to jail. No. No, but we know that plea bargaining is all part of the system, and it helps the system continue to move the pipeline. And it also, at times, prevents all that illumination from occurring because you plead to what you agree to, and you agree before the plea to whatever penalty you're going to get.
I guess it's worth remembering there's a benefit usually to the prosecution, too, when both sides agree to a plea agreement, right? That both sides are avoiding some risk. The prosecution avoids going to trial and not getting a conviction. Maybe with a plea deal, they're able to bolster their case against another defendant. So there are benefits to both sides.
Fair enough. Back to the phones, and Jane is next. Go ahead, Jane.
This idea about white-collar crime, the gravity of a crime, and the way we treat these perpetrators, it tells me that white-collar crime pays because there's no reasonable or realistic balance there between the crime and the penalties. And we're just, to me, very permissive with white-collar crime as opposed to, say, street crime. And I think that allows it to continue as rampant as it has been. And it applies in this case with Bob Wiesner. So would you comment on that? That I know you talked about that a little bit, but why are we so squishy and just so permissive with white-collar crime? Thank you.
Jane, thanks. Yeah, I mean, we have been talking about that just because a lot of listeners have raised that same question. You know, and here's an email from a different listener, Carl. An $8,000 fine and no jail time for committing a felony. If you or I committed a felony, you can bet we would serve prison time. Carl also says, how about you also discuss the job created for Maggie Brooks? He's talking about her new job with RTS. We discussed that on a separate program. And Carl, I would say you can always listen to the podcast, WXXINews.org/connections, for a prior discussion on that. But that's not directly related at all to the LDS situation here. So I know, Jim Shepard, I feel like we kind of covered this ground that Jane is bringing up here. Just another sort of vote from the public about a dissatisfaction with the deal.
And her point about white-collar crime, I think it's very valid in terms of what you see occurring, not just in Rochester or New York State or across the nation. It's an issue that almost condones the behavior because, you know, if I do white-collar crime and I take $10 million and my fine is $50,000, it's worth doing.
Well, I think that's the sentiment that we're getting from a lot of people. Here is another comment. Josh just wants to know if Mr. Shepard has spoken directly to Cheryl Donolfo about the differences in their opinions on the new ethics office.
I have not, and I'm glad that question came up because that is something we would like to do, to have the opportunity to expose her to the standards of the association, let her see it as a blueprint. And again, it's a defining moment. It's a tremendous opportunity for her, and not just the Monroe County Ledge, but for her to be able to achieve a goal that she set as part of her campaign, which was to have the most transparent and ethical government in the nation. And you follow those standards, you're on that path. If you do something less than that, basically it's less than that.
Okay, but Jim, just for people who missed it earlier, you said the standards as set out by the association. You're talking about what?
The Association of Inspectors General. And it's an organization that trains, sets the standards, evaluates that you're up to standard, and it's the preeminent organization in terms of the issues that we're talking about.
And they're saying don't do it the way she suggested, essentially. They're saying be tougher, create independence, create a layer that protects the person in that job. You know, and that's what David Andreotta in the Democrat and Chronicle, in his opinion piece, he had his own suggestions for how this gets done. And one of them is number three. Dave's third point was make it hard to fire the public integrity director. He writes, all county directors serve at the pleasure of the county executive, and the public integrity director would be no different under DeNolfo's bill. Given the sensitive nature of the public integrity director's job, picking apart county government, it makes sense for him or her to have more job security. The legislature should follow Chicago's example and codify the appointment of the public integrity director to a set term, perhaps 4 or 5 years, and mandate that his or her premature removal be for cause and cause only. And that's from Dave Andreotta in the Democrat and Chronicle. Thoughts on that, Jim Shepard?
I wholeheartedly agree with that recommendation, and it is consistent with the standards in terms of creating an independent office, creating an independent individual to serve in that office, and having a staff that is not afraid to do what they're put in place to do.
Now, when you were in that job for the city of Rochester, do you investigate when someone brings something to you? When they say, hey, this looks off, or we want to do this better, can you take a look at this? Or are you sort of constantly surveying with the power to reach out and start drilling down into some issues that you find?
At the time period I was there, a lot of issues were brought to our attention. Mm-hmm. Someone would come in and say that I believe that this is inappropriate. And I would say that the majority of the time, what it was a miscommunication or lack of information that let them believe that things were inappropriate. But the fact is they felt confident that it was going to be looked into and that the end result would be the truth.
Okay. Alex just wants to know, he said, we've been talking about the director of the new ethics office. What kind of staff would there be? How big and where would it be located? David Riley, do we know the answer to those questions?
All good questions, no. Certainly, it would have an office, and Ms. DeNolfo has told me she wants it to be outside the county office building to try to establish some independence there. But she has said she will file separate legislation to fund the office, which might flesh out a little bit more what it might cost and what kind of staff it would have. It would have some staff beyond the director, I gather, but that's about all we know at this point.
Okay, maybe we'll learn more in a week. Let me grab one more quick phone call. Bruce in Rochester. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hi. I just want to comment really about my frustration with the violations of public trust. You know, not only on the county level, but the state level. We hear a lot of stuff about downstate. On the Senate congressional where the governor has to get involved, it reflects poorly on the governor, you know, and it seems to be not only from, you know, the county, the water authority, all the way up to, you know, the governor, that the public trust is traded for, you know, very cheap. This guy was bought for $3,000, and I think it's even less when you talk about people in Long Island, et cetera, when you hear the news. And that's my biggest frustration is when I hear these people, former police chiefs, and you know, if you guys can really just step up as far as, you know, enforcing and punishing people who violate public trust, that's what I would like to really see. I'll take my answer up there.
Bruce, thanks very much. Any thoughts there, Jim?
I think in terms of having an Office of Public Integrity or our Inspector General, their role is not just investigation of wrongdoing. It's really prevention of fraud and abuse as well. And so that office, you know, is much broader than what we're discussing today. And it's not just about, you know, those instances where somebody breaks the law. It's really about helping an organization be the best it can be in terms of how it sets its processes up and how it does its business.
All right. And last quick question comes from Richard. He says, ask Jim Shepard, if you could, about the possibility that the county legislature turns the proposal down as they did the last time. Is there a sense that Republicans are going to get on board, do you think, this time because Ms. DeNolfo proposed it, Jim?
As I understand it, the what we're going to vote on next week is legislation that establishes the office. Now, in terms of how that office will be formulated, that's yet to be determined.
Okay. And then he says, wouldn't it be preferable to have the integrity office at all, even if it is flawed, as was the office that you once held for the city?
When I worked for the city, and it was established in 2006, I equate it to the iPhone. It came out in 2007. There's been 9 generations of it, and it's going to get better. We're in a different place as a result of what just happened with the pleas and what occurred over the last 5 years. And again, it's a defining moment for how we go forward.
All right, Jim is saying this is a big opportunity and we'll see what comes out of it. So that's the vote a week from tonight, and then we'll see how it gets created and how it gets fleshed out. And I want to stress again, the county executive not available this hour, but I expect on a future program she will be. She's been very accessible and I appreciate that. And Jim, you have as well, and I hope you'll come back and talk about this and other issues.
Thank you very much.
Jim Shepard from the Monroe County Legislature. David Riley, great work on the Democrat and Chronicle as always, and thanks for the expertise this hour.
Thanks, happy to be here.
All right, short break, more connections straight ahead.